You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
I'm Vicky Fleetwood, and you're listening to the Mall Over Rugby Podcast.
Hello. You may recognise us as the most infrequent rugby podcast in the world's rugby podcast in history. We are the Mall Over. We are back for the second week in a row because there's actually some stuff worth talking about. Albeit those of you that listened last week would have chewed through a lot of moaning from us around tackle heights and the likes. But let's talk about some actual rugby this week. I am delighted to be joined by the nicest man in Cornish rugby podcasting, Ben Eustace. Welcome, Ben.
Hello, mate.
With a mouthful of what looks like cheese on toast, the lensman, Dougie Andrews.
It's actually, if you can see that, a French stick that with my homemade tomato sauce and some mozzarella and some sun-dried tomatoes on it.
You're such a pretentious cunt, aren't you? Homemade tomato sauce, sun-dried tomatoes. Can I just say I made some homemade pizza bread? You can't.
How are you supposed to get your hoops tonight, Russ?
Actually, it was Alphabetti.
Fucking you, for you, weren't it?
Yeah, all jumbled up. And I would love to welcome back... Long time listener, friend of the show. every housewife's favourite, that's for certain. It's the farm vet. He's back, like, out of nowhere.
Yeah, and for those of you listening in video format, so just the four of us here, you would have clearly seen that my wife hasn't worked out that we don't record the video because she just crept at the bottom of the screen to go and put something behind me.
And that's quite the feat for Julie because she's about 6 foot eight.
Yeah, a little shorter than that, but yeah.
I know.
Is she really 6 foot eight?
No.
No.
Probably no. About 6 foot, I bet.
5 foot ten.
5'10".
5'10".
There you go.
She's smaller than the man child now.
Wow. I
mean, my 13-year-old son is taller than my wife.
Impressive. We had
he
a good day out.
Fucking cleaning up.
Like you wouldn't believe, I'm super jealous. I never got...
down Fishtrel Beach in June.
In 40 years of life, I never got as much action as he has in the last 6 months.
Mate, give me down that beach in June. Richard Keysing it.
that common phrase. What was he doing? Oh, he was Richard Keysing it. You could go down there any day of the week and it'd be Richard Keysing it. Brilliant. We had a good day out Saturday afternoon, Phil, didn't we? Obviously, we didn't get to watch Wales Ireland. Ben, you'll keep us abreast of that situation. But Phil and I took our respective under-10s and under-8s teams to the Cornish Pirates, who did a little guard of honour and stuff and on the pitch. And
what do you know about amateur rugby?
they got to play a little game of tag. At halftime, recklessly, we enabled some of the under-10s to play on the same pitch as the under-8s. Which
were they all on a child line after the match?
Well, I mean, some of the Cornish Pirates fans knew how to work a phone, then it might have been one. But unavoidably, we had an under-10 running directly into an under-8. Unavoidably. So, you know, it's what happens, isn't it? But they all had a great time. They loved it.
As they say, mate, fuck them.
Yeah. Well, no, they don't say that. They do not say that.
Is that not in the RFU handbook?
That's not. No, the phrase fuck them is definitely not in the RFU handbook.
Is that not rule 42, subclause 3?
Sorry, it's finger a minute.
Right. Anyway, Phil, you were going to say something.
No, I was going to say exactly what Ben said, to be honest, just a different number letter variation.
What nobody was about to say was A, fuck them, or B, finger them. We'll leave that to the lensman.
Neither of those phrases were in my mind, to be honest.
Right, let's move on swiftly. Obviously, we're back for two podcasts.
Welcome, new listeners.
Yeah, I mean, if you've not listened before, chances are you've already turned off by now. But we're back 2 weeks in a row. This is specifically for Matthew Ball, one of our long-term listeners and followers, one of the biggest people I've met in my life.
He wouldn't have found anything I just said offensive.
In fact, he'd be positively encouraged by all of the things Doug has just said. Shall we talk about some rugby? Let's talk about England versus Scotland, shall we? First of all, when we recorded last week, we had a brief chat about the match and what the selection could be because it hadn't been released yet. Or had it been released? Anyway, I think you did it on the Friday.
I don't think there's a squad release, no.
No. But so, obviously, the key call-outs from the starting lineup. Obviously, we have one of the Currys squared playing at seven. You know, why not? If you've got a great player, clone him. Mate, you know, what's better than one curry? All curries. People like them. Don Brandt and Ludlow in the back row. Ollie Chesson, Mario Itoje. Definition of insanity with Smith and Farrell at 10 and 12. Marchant at 13, who's, you know, had more than his fair share of cracks of the whip. And a debut for Ollie Hassel-Collins, which was welcome in some parts. Ben, firstly, what did you make of the team, and how did you see him shaping up in that sort of the first 15, 20 minutes?
Well, I wasn't particularly surprised by the team because I didn't think Borthwick would change it very much. You know, I think he was going to keep the core of the side because he's had such a short, you know, build up from taking the job. And I think with all of his centres basically getting injured or being pretty much permanently injured, he just decided to go with Smith and Farrell, which didn't work. You know, every now and again, England got ahead of steam and it looked pretty good in attack. Also, every now and again, it would completely break down and the ball would get loose and it would just get sort of thrown around like a hot potato. And I think we all made the same point on Saturday when we spoke about it. And pretty much everyone I've spoken to ever since has made the same point, is that if you had a big 12 who could carry straight, then that would remedy that situation, because you've still got the same issue that we've always had of there's no actual breaking of the gain line. If we can't outflank the team, we aren't going to go through the middle of them at the moment. And it's just leaving there being no plan B at all. I mean, having said that, you asked about the first 20 minutes and it actually looked pretty good until we actually had to tackle someone. And then, then it went a little bit wrong, I would say. So, you know, I think that the issue with the defence will probably be resolved in the next couple of weeks. They'll have more time with the team. Kevin Simfield's probably knocked about four people out in the last 2 days.
I was going to say, I don't think it's time that necessarily they need. It's a bollocking that they need.
Yeah.
And I can guarantee they'll have got one of them.
Well, I've seen a quote from Steve Borthwick in the last 5 minutes that said, well, when you implement a new defensive system, there's obviously going to be some issues. Well, I thought the main issue was their inability to make one-on-one tackles. Yeah, here we go. We slipped off a number of tackles. When you try and put in a new defensive system, that takes time. There's going to be mistakes when you're trying to build a team and implement new systems. Now, I think we all get that. I don't have an issue with that, but, you know, one-on-one tackles and several of them, you know, that's not an issue. That's just sort of a poor performance, isn't it? You know, it's something that you have to...
Yeah, it was nothing to do with systems. That's not systems. That's individual errors and multiple individual errors in a phase of play. And it's really quite disappointing. And I suppose ultimately when you look at pretty much all of the Scotland tries, the situations occur, certainly both Van der Merwe's. Okay, the Hugh Jones one you can put down to system. There were opportunities that arose around that first try as a result of some positioning. But both Van der Merwe tries and the Ben White try came purely down to people cocking up tackles, one-on-one tackles.
Yeah. Doug, you which end you were there obviously working, as you said before last week. which end were you at? Were you at the end where Scotland scored the tries in the first half or not?
No, I was second half for Scotland. Were attacking me, so I was the end, not Van der Merwe's ridiculous try.
But the end of his winning try. Were you in that corner or the other corner?
I was in that corner, yeah.
I mean, let's not get too deep into the game. What was it like in the stadium? What was the atmosphere like?
It seemed pretty good. I mean, it seemed like a lot of Scottish people there, which I thought was a bit surprising, really. I don't really want to talk about that. That's, you know, no one cares.
Okay. Where do you want to take it?
Well, I think where we need to take it, really, which is the sort of Smith-Farrell thing. I don't know. I think I put this on our group, but I'm not sure if, like, I haven't done it. But if anyone has done a breakdown on first receiver for England, because it felt to me like Owen Farrell was playing first receiver a hell of a lot.
Certainly the last 25 minutes, he was pretty much exclusively first receiver.
So if you're doing that, you're playing with 14 men and you're also making your attack one-dimensional, because Marcus Smith's not going to crash the ball up, is he?
Well, actually, in that last 20 minutes, it was fairly obvious that there seemed to be a repeated play they went to where first scrum half to Farrell and then Farrell passing in behind a couple of forwards to Smith, which has just given Smith the ball 15 metres back from the gain line with a couple of his own forwards in front of him. And then on top of that, a line of three attackers coming towards him. He's got no opportunity to do what he needs to do because he's been given the ball in completely the wrong areas.
I don't see that being a Nick Evans approach. That felt to me like it was the systems and processes of the last coaching team. It just didn't fit. It felt very much like we just put Eddie's game plan in a box and opened it up and tipped it out on Twickenham on Saturday, because it just didn't sit. There was no discernible difference to me. Now, I don't know whether that's because they didn't have the time in post to be able to actually impose their game plan, or if that is Farrell pulling rank mid-match and saying, this is what we're doing, this is what we know how to do, we're behind, let's go back to what we've been doing. But it seemed like everything positive came out of Smith's hands, and thinking about the first try for Malins, the second try for Malins started with Smith, I believe.
Well, the second try, throughout that phase, throughout those phases, Farrell was in the first receiver and Smith was almost nowhere, because it was Farrell to Marchant to Ludlam that gave the ball to to Malins.
Yeah, I think, they're trying to use...
Smith put the kick in for the first try.
Yes, he did.
So two points on that, Dougie. First of all, this is the issue with having two primary playmakers, is one of them's always out of the game. You don't have two primary playmakers in a move ever. So one of them is always out of the game.
I understand that, but Farrell's not there to be the primary playmaker. If he was, he'd be playing at 10.
Well, and that's the point, is we've got two people who want to play 10 playing at 10 and 12. Farrell's not a 12. He's never been a 12. So he's a 10, so play him at 10 or don't play him at all.
We all agree with that, Phil, I think. But the fact is he's being picked at 12.
Yeah.
Now, he either needs to be told to wind his neck in and play 12, or he needs to be dropped, because Smith is hands down, far and away, a better 10 than Owen Farrell. And why he's still kicking goals is beyond me, because I haven't seen him have a good game off the tee for years.
And the other point I was going to make is, and Dunk, Leicester fan may have a view on this, but I said it pre-pod that I don't think Borthwick was ever going to come in and massively ring the changes from day one and set his own stamp on it. Going from Jones to Borthwick was only ever going to be kind of incremental changes in a direction, as opposed to if you were to go, say, Jones to Gregor Townsend, he's going to come in and they're going to look completely different from day one. Or Jones to Edwards or whoever, or Gatland. I think Borthwick is only ever going to go, he's going to go 10% of the way each game, and it's going to take time to get there. But yeah, we all know Smith Farrell doesn't work. I could make a strong argument in that game that you start Farrell and you bring Smith on after 50 minutes.
Oh, I just hate that argument. It's like,
but
what are you bringing him on at 50 minutes for?
Against tired players.
Tell me what your idea behind bringing him on at 50 minutes is.
Because you've got more tired players, you've got more space for him to be able to do what he wants to do. Let Farrell control the game. Let's keep it tight for 50 minutes and then let Smith turn that into trouble.
Do you not understand just how negative that is? The message that sends to the team. We're going to pick Owen Farrell at 10 to keep it tight, and then we're going to bring Marcus Smith on. But you know what? If we're 15 points down at that point, the game's gone.
I'll be honest. I still think that depending on the type of game you want to play, I think the way England play, Owen Farrell is better suited to being 10. And I think if Owen Farrell was at 10, we would have won that game. If Owen Farrell was at 10, then they would pick an actual 12, somebody who is 12, their bread and butter. What they've got is they've got Marcus Smith. They've backed themselves into a corner yet again by making Farrell captain, right? So they have to pick him. So
I just don't get it. Like, as I said in the group, are we just going to pick him till he dies because he's good in meetings?
I think he's a fantastic player, mate. And
best 10 in the country, and he's not the best 12 in the country.
No, I think he could be the best 10 in the country, depending on the game you want to try and play. Marcus Smith, right? And I'll stand by this, and I've said it before. Marcus Smith is very good, and in fact, excellent in the way that Harlequins play, when he's got a big lump of Don Brandt inside him and he's got a big lump of Esterhazen outside him. So you're playing with a big 8 and a big 12 and you give him options, and then you even go out the back to 13. But he's got two forward running options either side of him there. He's played for England, and it's not his fault, right? I'm not blaming Marcus Smith for this. But when he's played for England, he hasn't had the ability to play in the same way that he does for Quins, where he's so effective, where he's got the options that he's used to having and can make plays the way he's used to making plays. That's what I thought having Nick Evans come in for this tournament would actually provide us with. And they would go down the line of, actually, right, well, we can't playing Ford and Farrell. Playing Smith and Farrell is completely fruitless. We've seen this. It doesn't work. It doesn't work in attack. It doesn't work in defence. And it doesn't work in defence, because all Owen Farrell wanted to do was defend in the 10 channel. So Owen Farrell defends in the 10 channel, drags every other defender in, and all Scotland wanted to do was go wide.
Right, mate.
So we were so narrow.
All you've done there for me is confirm what I'm saying, because you're saying that First off, Smith hasn't been allowed to play how he plays for Harlequins.
That's exactly what I just said.
Well, what, like, why pick him?
But again,
but here's exactly. The point. Let me get to my point. I don't think he's allowed to play like he does for Quins because of Owen Farrell. I don't think Owen Farrell lets him. You can't tell me that Farrell's not overruling Smith on certain occasions. I think he's shoving Smith out of the way almost. But going like, no, I'll have this one. I'll have this.
Owen Farrell isn't Andreas Dazen.
But we've got two.
It doesn't matter, Russ.
Of course it matters. No, but it's lazy. He's a primary. Russ,
it's lazy to say that because you've never. It is because you've never seen him play. You haven't seen him play in a system without Esterhazen. So if you're telling me that.
Yes, I have. I've seen him play in a system without Esterhazen for England.
Yes, but that's apples and oranges, Russ. Because what you're getting is Marcus Smith in a situation where he's not leading the team.
No, mate. So
it's lazy to say that he's only good with Esterhazen and Don Brandt.
I didn't say that. It doesn't have to be Esterhazen. It doesn't have to be Don Brandt. If you're going to pick Smith, and I've said this countless times, if you're going to pick Smith, you've got to pick a 12, not Farrell, right? But I'm also saying,
but you're saying he needs someone huge at 12.
No. I just say he needs a 12.
Someone that lets him play his game.
He just needs a 12. He needs an actual 12. Somebody that plays 12 properly. And the point
I think we're arguing about the same thing.
We are, but my point is that I don't care whether it's Smith or Farrell at 10. I literally don't care about that. I just want a 10 to play 10 and a 12 to play 12. That is it. It makes no difference to me if it's Smith or it's Farrell. I don't care. At this point, I really don't.
I just think that Smith can do more. It's a bit like when the England football team were picking Gerrard and Lampard in the midfield, right? And you had two players who were identical, and you had Paul Scholes out on the wing, the most creative and brilliant footballer in the country, being forced into a position where he wasn't being best utilised.
Just to get him in the team.
Yeah, and I think this is what's happening with Smith. I think they're so worried about not picking him and what that the optics of that they're picking him, but they're like, oh, we can't upset Owen. It's like somebody's got to have the stones to either say we're not picking Marcus Smith and we're going to play Farrell at 10, or we're not picking Owen Farrell, we're going to play Smith at 10.
Yeah, and whichever way they choose, I'm fine with it. But I think Borthwick is he's the type of coach that isn't maybe good. It's not likely he wants to play that flamboyant sort of attacking style. But in which case it needs to be Farrell.
We have a body of evidence that tells us that Farrell and Ford and that team that finished the game yesterday on Saturday, that team's not going to win a World Cup.
So I think kind of if we're five matches into the Six Nations, we're at the end of the Six Nations, and we've played Smith Farrell every one of those games, we'll be in exactly the same position as we were last year. Whether we've won two games, three games, four games, one game, it doesn't really matter. The team will not have progressed. That is, I think, the vast majority of the English supporting, watching fraternity, community, or maternity, because we need to be gender neutral, would be in agreement that Smith Farrell does not work. And if we continue throughout the entire Six Nations with that, we'll have learnt nothing. And Nick Evans will not be picking an attack based on those options. And we've got to hope that comes down to some injuries, to some key centres, and Borthwick not being able to play what he wanted to play. I would be pretty shocked if he starts with that combination. I think he'll go with Farrell, Slade and somebody else.
I think he will too. I think he'll play Farrell, I think at some, Slade.
At some point, someone's got to have the balls to say, Owen Farrell, what you bring to the leadership element. Let's not forget, he's supposed to be this incredible leader. We keep getting pumped.
So rugby is not... So there's been examples in other sports of incredible leaders who didn't deserve their place in the team, but on individual skill, but what they did in terms of improving the team was a massive positive. I don't think I've ever seen an example of it in rugby. If you're not good enough to get picked in your position, captaincy's a pile of horseshit. They talk about it with Alan Wynne-Jones, who's an absolute donkey, but what he brings to the team in his leadership, what does he bring? Like, and I get that. I totally buy into that. And equally, I buy into what you're saying, Doug, in terms of, I think he's been given too much responsibility historically, and that sits on his influence. Shoulders. Yeah, I totally get that. I still think there's games when Owen Farrell is our best choice at 10, because he can manipulate and control a game in a way that Smith hasn't demonstrated he's got the ability to yet. And I think Smith will get there with the opportunities.
I don't think Smith has ever been given any opportunity to control a game.
No, he hasn't.
That may be so. Ben, you wanted in?
Yeah. I mean, I don't want to pile on Farrell because I think he's a brilliant player. And I think you're right, Russ. Like, if he was playing at 10, we'd look a better team than with him playing at 12. But the thing, and I think I mentioned it the other day, was the best break that Smith made when he looked most threatening was when he threw a dummy to Watson when Watson had come off the bench. And I think that was quite telling in that the Scottish defence was wary of Watson, whereas they're certainly not wary of Farrell cutting them apart. I don't think they were too worried about Marchant by that stage. And I think having a player of that quality just put a little bit of doubt in their minds. And I think the whole back line just needs looking at again. I think Watson should come in on the wing. And then, as we say, the centres have to change. If they played Smith...
Go on, Ben. Keep going.
Watson's not in the top 10 wingers in England. It's ridiculous.
That's just not true. You see it. As soon as he gets the ball, the game seems to speed up. It's just that he's injured a lot. It's the only reason that he's not in the team. He's a completely proven international player.
We shouldn't have bothered with this podcast. We should have just dug out this podcast from week one of the Six Nations last year and played that, because we're doing exactly the same thing.
Which shows we've got exactly the same problems.
Yeah. Exactly, but we're still picking the same fucking players. That's my entire point.
But we're not picking them.
So good enough. Pick different ones.
But what if the different ones aren't any better?
At least you'll know they're no better. We already know these cunts aren't any good.
can I talk about back row a bit? And in particular, Dom Brandt.
Ben, let Ben finish.
Well, all I was going to say was
his point.
I would quite like to see Smith, Lawrence, and Slade.
Oh, hallelujah!
We'd all love to see that.
Yeah,
I think we would all literally be filling our pants if that happened.
I mean, I'd happily watch Farrell, Tuilagi, and Lawrence as well. But
yeah,
either way, you've got
Farrell and Tuilagi get on a bus and never be seen again.
I think Ollie Lawrence needs to come in. I think with Henry Slade, similarly, you could argue Elliot Daly, maybe not at 12, but I think you could argue that having someone who can play ball in that midfield is essential. But Farrell is a 10 playing 12, as opposed to someone like Slade, who is an actual centre got all-round skill. And, you know, Henry Slade has got a lot of England caps, and for quite a long time has maybe flattered to deceive a little bit with his performances. So maybe his time has run out. But the type of player that he is would perfectly complement. And did he not play outside of Smith once when Farrell was injured? Wasn't there a match, and I can't remember who it was against, and it was Smith, Slade, and Tuilagi, maybe? Did they start against South Africa before Tuilagi got injured? He did his hamstring.
Yeah, wasn't it Australia,
I think. One of it, and they looked like electric for the first 15, 20 minutes, and it all looked quite cohesive, and then Tuilagi did a hamstring. I think that was the game. But
I just think
like what you were saying, Ben, is having a ball player that isn't a 10 playing 12.
Yeah, I don't want to keep Phil too long, but I think
keep me as long as you want.
I think the actual style of play they were playing that Doug described when they were sort of, or maybe it was Phil, where they were throwing it out the back to Smith, I think that was definitely a hangover from Eddie Jones. And it might have been the fact that they didn't have that playmaker outside that they were trying to replicate. Not that it worked, but I can kind of see a little bit of logic to that. And I guess this moves on to Phil's point about the back row, but like England always have, once they've got a bit of momentum behind them and got recycling the ball quickly, and if Van Portfleet and even worse Youngs didn't stand and look at it for a few seconds before they picked it up, then they started to look good again. So, you know, again, the key has always been speed of ball.
Yeah. What I will just say, the argument that the balls behind centres and runners to Smith are all well and good when the defence thinks that one of those centres or one of those players is going to get the ball.
If you've already broken the defence.
Yeah.
If the defence is broken, it's ideal, but they aren't because exactly, they've got no one.
Because they haven't straightened it up to start off with. So you just look at the way Scotland played, right? Tuipulotu at 12. He had a very good game. He didn't make many metres personally on his own, but he made metres and he did the job he was there to do, which was occasionally crash it up hard through the middle. Yeah. Keep them honest. And then where did all their tries come from? Bang.
Wide.
They made the break. So the one for White, so they had, the first try, they went off the top of the line out, didn't they? Yeah. They broke through the defence, which
someone sold themselves.
Yeah. And they got through, they went bang, kicked through, Hugh Jones scored. The second try, kick tennis. It was Farrell had spent the last 5 minutes just chasing his ass, just trying to tackle Finn Russell. And he got to him. We turned it over, kicked it back to Van der Merwe, who just ran through everyone. We'll come on to Don Brandt's piece in that in a minute. The next try, just when we clawed our way back at halftime, we'd just taken the lead. We then scored the try to go, was it 21-12 or whatever it was?
But that was the point where we should have pulled away there. That was a winning try.
So straight away from that restart, Don Brandt dropped the restart, gave them a scrum. They had a couple of phases. They went across the pitch twice, across the pitch, back across, because they were forever stretching it because they had a straight running threat. England had narrow defence. Ben White, Curry misses a tackle, Ben White scores. Right. Similarly, the final Van der Merwe try was following a kick, Young's kick, too long. Somebody caught the ball. I think it might have been Russell. It might have been Kinghorn who came on for Hogg. He caught the ball on his 22 line. He then went through a couple of pairs of hands. They were at the halfway line before anybody had even laid a glove on them.
Mm.
Right? They then went back across the pitch. They were given a penalty advantage in the midfield, which we all went, oh shit, penalty advantage. They could probably kick that if they wanted to anyway. That would have put them in the lead. They went straight across the pitch to Steyn. And because they were worried about the threat, the defence was narrow, Steyn went right round the outside, broke the gain line by about 30 metres, got tackled, recycled all the way over the other side of the pitch. Van der Merwe scored. Now, again, the defence for Van der Merwe's that try, Smith and Farrell between them conspired to make it as easy as humanly possible. I mean, when you've got someone running down the touchline, what is the thing you learn, especially as a fullback, Ben? What is the thing you learn the most when you're growing up?
The touchline's
your defender. So how they let him step back inside there, I'll never know. And people can go, oh, Van der Merwe was class. Van der Merwe was this. England made Van der Merwe look like fucking the Incredible Hulk. They made him look like that. Right? He wasn't that good. Right? He finished them well, fair play. But England have to be responsible for allowing him to score those two tries. That's a fact. But my overarching point of that is Scotland stretched the pitch. They made that Twickenham pitch as big as humanly possible by having honest runners through the middle in the back line.
Does that kind of work into what we were saying? Is it yesterday or this morning? I saw someone online say that a lot of the England players you wouldn't expect, were quite obviously blowing in the last 10 minutes. And obviously Scotland, I don't know if Scotland forced that by going wide or if they recognised it and then started going wide. But, you know, it almost sort of came to me that maybe because the Premiership is so stop-start that the England players aren't used to that, because you've got actually all three of the Six Nations games had a lot more, or felt like they had a lot more in-play time than the average Premiership game. You know, all three of them were quite watchable games. So I wonder if that is just a little thing that we need to watch out for, because when was the last time England won a game when they've been behind with a few minutes to go? It's been a long time, and no, we have been behind with that a lot.
The only time we've ramped up was New Zealand in the autumn, wasn't it? When we were behind that mental last 10 minutes. But it's a very fair point. There did seem to be a lot of ball in play time. Phil, you wanted to talk about the back row and around the back row, more specifically, Alex Donbrandt.
Yeah, so I suppose the obvious thing was his absolutely shocking effort at tackling Van der Merwe for the try, which was just for an international number 8, was disgraceful. But just coming back to your point, Russ, about keeping players honest, I was just listening to you saying, oh, you run hard, you keep them honest, you ship them wide. I mean, I'm trying to teach the under-10s that at the moment. It's been the base tenet of every rugby coach for the last 40 years, is you tie people in, you earn opportunities to go wide, then you go wide in the wing and score your tries. I can't understand why we, as four blokes who've played a bit of rugby and watched a bit of rugby, are having to bring this up like it's something revolutionary. It's really not difficult. It's really basic concept.
Hubris, Phil. But, it's hubris.
Yeah. But yeah, Donbrandt. So shocking attempt at tackle. To me, he reminds me of the guy who comes along every other Saturday, plays for the seconds, looks like an absolute world beater. You finally convince him to come up and play first team rugby, and he just looks lost. He is an excellent Premiership player. In the Premiership, he carries strong. He runs. He makes decent yards, lots of carries. Okay, he does the showreel kind of stuff. Obviously, has a really good relationship with Marcus Smith, which I think happened a couple of times in the game. But what he does generally when he's playing for Quins is he's running at spaces, and so off the back of, like, little moves off the back of a line out, running at spaces between 9-10 channel or off 10, running at 10-12 channel, running at spaces, using a bit of a burst of speed, getting through those spaces and then doing the fancy one-hand stuff. The reality is, in international rugby, you don't get those spaces because you're not playing against 15 Premiership players. You're playing against two or three Premiership players from each club who happen to be the best two or three from each club, or one or two, or however many. And I just don't see his game being what an international team need at number 8. We talk about yards after contact, and he's not particularly good at that. And that's the one thing that Billy was fantastic about, is he takes ball into contact, makes yards, sucking two or three players, and that creates the space elsewhere. And I just don't think Donbrandt does that. The person that did that on Saturday, and the person that's done that every game I've seen him play for the last 2 or 3 years, barring one or two poor ones in there somewhere, is Ludlam. Ludlam carries hard in contact, carries past contact, keeps going in the back row. I mean, Genge does it a lot as well. To me, I think the back row looks much better if it's Curry, Willis, Ludlam than if it's Curry, Ludlam, Donbrandt. I think
Sorry, go on, Phil.
Yeah, no. I was just going to wrap it up and then pass to Doug's view on that.
So I think it's a bit of a sort of an existential problem, really, because the only way you get picked for international rugby is by standing out at club rugby. And Marcus Smith and Alex Donbrandt have stood out at club rugby level, right? So they obviously get their recognition. The issue comes when you start bringing players into a system that isn't designed for them. And it's a coach, like, so you have a coaching problem. Is a coach picking a player because they're very, very good? Or is he picking a player because they fit his system? And I think in both Donbrandt and Smith's case, he's got players there that just don't fit the way they want the international rugby is played. I don't think it's that they're not good enough to play international rugby. The problem with the England game plan is that we hack the lever off the ball for 60 minutes and then wonder why our players are blowing out their arse when we ask them to do actually something that they're known to do. Now, that tackle on Vandermeer was poor, but don't level the whole blame for that try on Alex Donbrandt. There were six other swats that missed him before he got to that point.
I wasn't coming in
at a bad angle. And the only thing Donbrandt could have done, because if he'd have gone low, he'd have slid over anyway. He had to go high because he had to roll him in the tackle. And Vandermeer's as big and as strong as Alex Donbrandt. So that's not a Donbrandt thing for me. I don't level any blame at him. He was the last line of defence. He was there when the fullback wasn't, because they'd all been sat on their asses. I think the problem we've got is there are too many players being forced into this side, playing a game plan that doesn't suit them, playing, I think, a lot of the more established players, and I'll level this at Farrell, I'll level this at some of the forwards like Genge and Sinclair, I'll level it to a lesser extent some of the other backs, but I think there's a bit of a, I don't think there's a sort of cohesive team there. I think there's a lot of lads playing for themselves, personally.
England haven't been a cohesive team for quite some time. I can't remember the last time England were a proper cohesive team. And then
it certainly doesn't look like they enjoy their rugby.
No. And then, so then you've made a very valid point there, Doug, around coaching and styles. You know, regardless of media pressure, regardless of, you know, the exciting rugby Smith can play and all of the stuff that he can offer. And if Steve Borthwick and his mantra to wants to play the way that Leicester won the title, which was big forwards, lots of kicking, box kicking, almost back to the old Saracens way of strangle the opposition, pin them back, and then make them make mistakes, then there's absolutely no point in picking Marcus Smith. Then you may as well just pick Farrell, because his tactical kicking and is right up there.
We said it all along, didn't we, with Jones? The way Jones wants to play, why is he not picking Wigglesworth? So he's the perfect scrum up for that system.
Ben Spencer.
But coming back to
Ben's point though, if that's what you want to do is to strangle the life out of it, those players need to be a damn sight fitter to do that for 80 minutes in a rugby match. They shouldn't, because the whole Saracens Wolfpack approach is based on hunting the opposition down as a group, and they're not doing that.
How do you get international rugby players fitter? I don't think it's a thing. Like, it's not like Harlequins play a low tempo easy game, is it?
No.
But as per Ben's point, Premiership rugby appears to be an easy
accusation to make at someone. Like, if you were to look at Josh McCallie after 30 minutes, he looks fucked.
No, but so,
it's not so much that they're unfit, it's just that it's a different
type of fitness.
Are we claiming what evidence have you got to suggest that Alex Donbrandt's not fit?
No, that wasn't an Alex Donbrandt comment. That was a comment about how the fact that we do not seem to build energy levels towards the end. We seem to flag towards it, and we don't have that kind of extra level that the opposition always seem to have more energy towards the end of the game than we do as a team. And I think it's probably a systemic thing around how the Premiership's played. It is more stop start than the other leagues. So it's a different level of fitness. It's more a it's more of a endurance than a cardiovascular fitness. And I think there is a point there. Maybe I should have phrased it differently. Maybe it isn't, if we want to play that game style, the players need to be fitter. Maybe it's that game style doesn't suit people who come out of the Premiership in international rugby.
The other thing with the Saracen style of play is that they beat you up when they had the ball as well. There was always carriers coming, and I don't think at the moment England have got enough of those.
No.
Look, I don't think you can, you know, when Saracens were doing that, they were doing it with Billy V, Will Skelton, Mauro Itoje, and they're not necessarily doing that anymore. They're doing it with Andrew Kitchener because they have to play by the same rules as everyone else. But the fact remains that, yeah, but we don't, because we don't have those players available. So there has to be an element of cut your cloth accordingly. We have to, if the players we have, and when English clubs look the best is when they're playing like a Harlequins or like a set. We've spent 30 years as a nation with academies breeding skills and skills and offloads and running and do all this. And then we get to international level and we say, right, lads, fuck all that. We're going to belt the shit out of the ball for 80 minutes. You're going to chase it and eventually they'll get knackered. We don't actually utilise any of the skills that all these players have spent their entire careers learning. It seems mad to me that we could probably put, I'm not joking, like 30 legitimate players in our backs that are skillful as fuck. They probably would have been like All Blacks back in the day. You know what I mean? Because they're that skillful. And we don't get the ball past 12. We just twat the shit out of it and hope that we get a couple of penalties and push over a try at a line out.
Can we not put Harlequins on some sort of pedestal as playing this fantastic high-scoring attacking rugby? They're the fifth highest-scoring team in the
Harlequins. I'm looking at Saints. No. Sale play good rugby out of the backs.
Yeah.
So
that was
only really Leicester that boot the shit out of it and Saracens.
And Saracens are the top scoring team in the Premiership by over 50 points.
Yeah.
It works.
Yeah. Well, so does the other way. It's just we don't have the players to do that. When are we going to realise that we don't have the same size of players as South Africa or New Zealand? We just don't have the players to be able to beat other, or even Ireland. We don't have the players to beat teams up. We've got to accept it.
And I think only South Africa really do have the players to beat other teams up consistently, regularly.
And we need to win in World Cups.
Yeah. But we're not going to be able to do that. You're right. We need to play a different game plan. And that all of that just comes back to the fact that having Farrell and Smith playing together doesn't work. We need to do something different.
I think to put a positive spin on it, I thought Ludlam played really well. Russ said it, or Phil said it as well. And I think, personally, although Curry had his moments, I think Earl should be starting because Earl's one of the form players in the Premiership. And I think with the state of what we've got at the moment, I think you probably give Dom Brandt the rest of the tournament and just see if he can.
Who's the better option than Dom Brandt, really, though?
Willis.
I'll go with you there.
Is eight not now a holding pattern until Mercer becomes available?
I said we had this discussion on Saturday, Ben, and I couldn't agree more. The more you see of Zach Mercer, and I think he'll tear up trees in the Premiership next season.
What's Zach Mercer good at, though? This is my point. What's Zach Mercer good at?
He's ball carrier now.
Run straight, hard, and offload. Yeah. All the things that they're not asked to do. So my point is that he'll get into the England side and he won't be able to play the way he plays.
The thing with Mercer, though, is he's got very quick feet. So he's going to make more ground than we've seen Dom Brandt do. He's not going to make it quite in the same way that Vunipola does. But, you know, you quite often would see him, even when he was like a beanpole at Bath, just make two extra yards when he had no right to.
Driving is the drive of the legs, isn't it?
That's a fair point.
But so, I take back my back row and I change it to Earl Ludlam Willis. That
I'm more than happy with that back row. I think Ben Earl has to play. I think he and with that flexibility, and I don't think you need in the Six Nations, I don't think you need necessarily to have those big monster four in inverted commas forwards. Like, you'd have to match South Africa for physicality in a scrum, right? Whereas I think for the Six Nations, you need players like Ben Earl, who is a strong ball carrier, but also gets in and around and over the ball. I don't see Don Brandt do that anywhere near enough. One of Eddie Jones's big criticisms of Sam Simmons was that he played too much out in the backs and scored too much, all he scored all these tries, but they're out in the backs. Well, Alex Don Brandt, if you watch Alex Don Brandt, the big sort of highlight reel carries he makes are all runs that should really come from your 12 out of the 12 channel. And he always arrives on time at pace, which is great. Don't get me wrong. I'm not faulting him for it, but you know, I want your eight to also be making the hard yards in contact.
They tried him a couple of times with an inside ball, didn't they? Running off.
And he just
off Smith's shoulder. Because Farrell was no real threat on a straight run.
Yeah, they just knew he was coming.
The defence was waiting for him.
They just knew. Yeah, exactly. It's madness.
It's not hard to work out the issue. I mean, I think we're all dropping the lead really as well. That we played six front rowers and they were all shit.
Yeah. I mean, I'll take that back. I don't think Genj was shit. I think Genj
is great. Well.
And I think one thing about Genj, yes, sometimes he struggles in the scrum, which is probably his primary job, but he offers more than most in regards to go forward carries.
Okay, yeah. Okay, shit's a big word.
You can use it for the rest of them.
I have a different view from you. You guys are watching it on telly with all the replays and all the commentators. I kind of tune the commentary out apart from names. It felt to me like our scrum got beat up a little bit. Would that be right?
I think it was fairly even. I think it was fairly even.
It seemed like it wasn't.
Second half, we
felt like Nell had the edge over.
I think it's easy to support. It's easy to create a narrative, especially, give away a couple of penalties. A referee is on your case straight away, and it's very, very hard. Like he gave one for Genj taking it to ground straight away. And once you do that once, the referee seems to have it in his head. And if you're the first person to do that, you're fucked.
Yeah. Because I'm not sure what Dan Cole brought to the party. Apart from
absolutely nothing on Saturday, as far as I'm concerned. But again, we did
get a penalty and go forwards on his side, the first scrum that he played. But that's all he did.
We, at the moment, as far as I can see, and I don't know too...
But he's 39, isn't he?
We 35, isn't he? But we lack any real viable...
There isn't an alternative. That's the problem. There is no alternative.
Bevan Rod, maybe?
Massive problem for the English.
Huge.
How can we not turn out a couple of props? How can we not do that?
It's huge. And it's only going to get worse. It's only going to get worse.
Why is that? Is it because we're just... Our first, rather than developing props, we're just like, just get old Schumann in or, Van der bullcrap.
I mean, it might be what you were saying earlier about developing all these offloading players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I think that's why we struggle to find a 12 as well.
It does seem a lot of the time, like the sort of under 20s props that have come through over the last sort of 10 years have all been that sort of, more athletic, sort of shorter, kind of quick guys.
You know why? It costs 70 grand. It costs 70 grand to bring a fucking lump of horse meat over who is stronger than the tractor he pulls along. That's why.
We need to find some farmers.
It costs them £17 a month. It's like sponsoring an African child.
When shickling English again?
You too can sponsor a South African prop for just £14 a month. Oh, no, you can't because they're all at sale.
Yeah, when is shickling English again?
Not soon enough.
Because he was and then he wasn't.
It would be delicious if our starting props at the World Cup were Val Rapava Ruskin and Patrick Shickling.
Well, so let's ask that question now. How in amongst all of this, how is Rapava Ruskin still not getting a go?
And
we're trotting back Villapola and Cole.
And Bevan Rodd keeps getting picked despite being beaten by 12-year-old children in the scrums.
I don't know if how much of like the EPS squad, because Villapola's definitely in it, right?
Yeah.
Like you would guess that maybe Bevan Rodd is too. I don't know.
That whole premise baffles me.
How many of those players? Well, you sort of tying your hands behind your back, aren't you? Yeah. Like
you sacked the manager. Sacked the manager and you're stuck with all these same cunts that he'd let him down.
Yeah. I definitely felt like at the end of that game, it was like, well, I'm not exactly sure what is meant to have changed here. But like, we finished the game with Cole and Villapola on the pitch.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It was like, and our best player for the last, feels like a decade. I don't know. How old is Mario Tojo?
28, I think.
Something like that.
28, yeah.
He's 28. Has he lost the step? He seems to have lost an edge. I don't know if he's lost a bit of hunger or if he just feels to me like he's just, he doesn't have that edge. He doesn't feel like, because when he was fresh onto the scene, he was so much more physically imposing and was just barnstorming around the pitch, and every breakdown he was there, it feels like he's never in a breakdown anymore. I can't remember the last time I saw him win a turnover.
He reminds me of David Beckham when all the sponsorship contracts came in, and it was all about all I need to do is one or two things a game that look good, and all the work rate's gone out.
What's the old boxing quote? It's hard to get up to train and knock people out when you're sleeping in silk sheets.
Yeah.
Probably doesn't help that every idiot on Twitter has been saying he gives away too many penalties for the last 5 years either.
Well, that may be the case. But I'm not wrong, right? Can you remember the last time he used to do like Spider-Man arms over a ruck and go in and you just knew, right, that's a penalty, and it's, you know, he'd just get up.
Yeah.
It feels like it's been a long time since I've seen that kind of
performance. He's just been sticking in 7 out of 10s.
Yeah.
I felt he was completely anonymous on Saturday. I barely noticed him.
Yeah.
When Mauro Tojo was like, what the fuck? Like, and he should have, I said when he won his first cap, he'll win 50 caps as England captain. It's never going to happen. He's never going to be England captain. Because Farrell's going to be there till he's 48. Oh, but he gives good speeches. We can't drop him.
He'll be player coach when he's 48. Player coach.
He already is.
Right. You know what worries me though. So let's look forwards a little bit.
So this weekend. Sorry, just on the prop thing. EPS props. You've got Dan Cole, Genge, Joe Hayes, Carl Sinclair, Mako, Will Stewart. That's it. Those are the EPS props.
Dan Cole hasn't played international rugby for 18 months, has he?
No, but he's still
in the EPS.
Just added him in, I suppose, because to get him in this squad. I mean, none of them fill you with a huge amount of confidence.
I don't think Will Stewart's dreadful, but he's out for forever.
Yeah. And then
hookers, you've got Walker, Singleton and George.
He's like...
Uninspiring, and Karen Dickey's broken.
But if you haven't got Karen Dickey or George, you're really struggling now.
Dan Cole's 6'3".
Yeah, he was always tall. I mean,
I get that.
he hasn't suddenly grown. I realise what I just said then.
Okay, so let's move on a little bit.
Sorry, Russ. I've just Googled Maro Itoje, and the first video that comes up is called 5 minutes of Maro Itoje being a shithouse.
I mean, you should watch it. Maybe we'll share it. I've got a slight worry. I didn't watch any of Italy-France yesterday, but looking at the scoreline and obviously coming off the back of this defeat, we should on paper comfortably beat Italy on Sunday at Twickenham. I always would have, been of the opinion, Italy is the game. If you're going to try something out, if you're going to experiment, if you're going to do something a little bit different, you would do it, especially if you were at home to Italy, you would sort of take that chance. I don't think England are in a position to take Italy that lightly this year. And could find themselves with egg on their face come 5:30 on Sunday evening.
I listened to the last 20 minutes of the France-Italy game, and France very, very nearly ended up with egg on their face. I think this Italy prospect is very different from what it was last year, or indeed probably any of the last 20-odd years.
They're a proper unit now. They've got players.
Yeah.
And everything.
Yeah.
France went back. France did a France, and as soon as they didn't pull away and Italy showed some fight, France actually looked quite shaken for probably half an hour. And Italy played some good rugby, and they made ground almost every time they carried. The centres played well. Obviously, you got the fullback who scored a fantastic try. I think we've mentioned it. Is it Rutser, the second row? He gets around the pitch as well nicely. They've got a good back row, and they were the better team for a good half an hour. And it, unfortunately, the opportunities they had to score at the end sort of all came down to the fly half, and Alan missed a fairly tricky penalty. It was from distance, but that would have brought them to within 3 points. And then they had some very, very kickable penalties. So they would have been 2 points behind. They had some very kickable penalties in the last 5 minutes. And they had one, perhaps on the halfway line, where if he kicked into the 22, they'd have had a good chance of scoring, and he hardly made the 10-meter line. And then they had one about 10 metres out on 80 minutes, and Alan went for the corner. And it, if you've ever seen me kick for the corner, it looked like one of mine. It went about 0.75 of a metre forward and all the way the rest of it into touch. And it just cost them. So they even had chances to win. But having said that, they did what it... Those were sort of small errors that cost them a win, whereas last year they were making big errors that were just getting them beaten by half time. And they did try that again, getting kicks charged down and silly little errors in their own half. So you just got to take advantage of them. But I think England could come unstuck. They can't take them lightly. And the fact it's at Twickenham probably makes it less likely that Italy will carry it away, but you never know. France look good every now and again, but it was a bit of a nothing performance.
Cool. Well, we'll have to wait and see. And they've got France welcome Ireland this weekend, don't they? I think it's in France.
No, it's in Ireland.
He's in Ireland, is it? Right, there you go. Got that wrong. But Ireland are without... out of 50-50. Fucked it. Ireland without Furlong. Kean Healy, is it? And Furlong?
Gibson-Park's out.
Gibson-Park.
And potentially Phil. who's undergoing HIA. He's in the concussion protocol, isn't he, old Johnny?
He'll be fine. He'll be fine. He knows how to answer the right questions.
And if they haven't got Furlong, Gibson Park and Sexton, you know, they could quite likely get turned over. I mean, they started very well. Did they just get the game won against Wales, Ben, on Saturday and then take their foot off the gas? Or did Wales come into it through their own volition?
Well, Wales improved, but they almost had to. The first half was men against boys, really. The Ireland team, when they were carrying, they did what England didn't do a lot of the time, which was always have support. They were almost sort of running in threes quite a lot of the time. And they scored after 2 minutes, something like that. And then probably by 10 minutes, it was 14-0. And yeah, by half time, it was completely out of sight. Wales got a try, but, you know, it was never going to make a huge amount of difference. And
I mean,
second
and
half, 7-0.
Half that Welsh team would have been the same team as when Gatland was last their coach.
Yeah, absolutely.
Including the rotting carcass of Alan Wynne-Jones.
Yeah, I mean, the centre that made his debut, he showed a couple of flashes.
You get arrested for that, don't you?
Yeah. but the rest, you know, there wasn't a lot going on from the rest of them. Ireland started to give away penalties in the second half, which probably meant that they didn't really fly away with the game. But, you know, it was completely under control. Keenan was brilliant at fullback. They've got a plan. They've got a back row that hammers away ball carrying, and they do have any number of 12s that can keep the ball and run straight. It was McCloskey this time, and he was good. And where Van der Flier has come from in the last couple of years, he was always a good player, but
Pretoria, I think.
Well, he is Irish, isn't he? But yeah, him and Doris are really good players.
Sweetman Doris. You know, did they call just Doris on the thing? But on every bit of thing I see written down, he's Sweetman Doris.
Never noticed so that. Thing.
I take it back, he's Dutch, not South African heritage, Van der Flier.
Okay. Right.
But, well, yeah, they were pretty impressive. I don't know what France have got any to come back, because on that evidence, then you'd back Ireland. But without Furlong, maybe they get a bit attacked up front, because Wales did get a little bit of change out the scrum at times. But
do you reckon Sean Edwards doesn't get a response out of that France team?
Well, he was fuming at one stage. Yeah.
If you could all see Doug's Sean Edwards impression, it's uncanny.
Just side. I mean that is pretty much first choice front side that they played. Bench.
Yeah, there's no Wokey, was there?
I mean, the last two games they've humped Wales and taken France to the wire. So, you know,
Italy are good. That's the point.
Yeah, Italy are good. England aren't. They might beat us.
Yeah.
My own sanity, I hope they don't beat us. It'll be a long goal drive back on Sunday evening if Italy beat England. Can you imagine taking Samuel to his first ever rugby match?
Russ, the one consolation is if you're driving, you can't be on Twitter, because that will be a cesspit.
Yeah. Yeah, it might be for the best if that actually happens. So, Douglas, you're not working this weekend, are you not? At Twickenham on Sunday?
How do you know my schedule more than me?
Well, I don't. I just remember you saying that you weren't doing it next week.
I've got the weekend off, actually.
I'll tell you what is happening, though. A fucking James Haskell DJ set at halftime. Fucking stick
take some acid.
Me.
I mean, I don't mean like the gear. I mean, just take some
cyanide
to pour over your face.
I thought you meant like one of those capsules in your teeth, and if it gets too much for him, just bite down.
Just cyanide capsule, like they used to, pilots used to have in the Second World War.
Yeah, no, just some battery acid.
Just Russ in the corner. Foaming at the mouth just with a sign round his neck.
If we're losing at half, imagine losing it, being down to Italy at half time, and they come over the public address system. Now, rugby fans, we've got over the on the decks James Haskell. Fucking kill me now.
I mean, you've just been subjected to 40 minutes of watching England kick the ball backwards and forwards to Italy. Yeah.
So your eyes are bleeding.
Yeah, your eyes are already bleeding. Well, not only have you been asleep for 35 minutes, but your eyes are bleeding from the 5 minutes you've actually watched.
You know what'll have happened?
Your butt cunt face comes on and you've got to listen to him spinning plates.
And then your ears are burning.
Guaranteed Farrell's picked the set list. He's told him what songs he's allowed to play.
Absolutely. And I can also guarantee you that he'll be wearing a T-shirt that's two sizes too small.
Come on, Jimbo. Let's get you to Matalan. Oh, gosh. But yes, I've got that to look forward to. And I can't even get myself 5 points deep.
Is it at half time?
Yes.
Oh. This country.
What a great reaction.
I want you to, well, I might have to do it myself. I might record this podcast and just isolate that Ben going, ugh. And then assign it to my ex-wife phoning me.
Oh, this country. Right. Let's do some any other business and get out of here, shall we? Phil, you've not been here for a little while. Have you got any other non-rugby related business?
Oh, I'm not sure I do. My life seems to have been like dominated by rugby for the last 3 months without actually it giving me any enjoyment. So, yeah, I'm looking forward to going skiing in April. That's about as good as it gets.
Humble brag. Ben, anything from you?
I thought outside the box the other week, and I went to see Plymouth Argyle at Home Park and thoroughly enjoyed it. 4-2 against Cheltenham.
Flying high, aren't they, the Pilgrims?
Yeah.
Could be championship next season.
Just lost to Sheffield Wednesday, though, didn't they? I'm an expert now.
Football expert, first time in 40 years.
It was a really good day out. Sorry, I recommend it.
Excellent. Douglas, anything from you?
I've had a couple of incidents recently of just sort of old, you know, crusty white dudes being dicks. The latest of which, I was going out for lunch with the Lens Et. Sure.
And, can we workshop that?
And I was trying to pull into a parking space, right? And I wasn't trying to pull into this park. There's a car in front tried to pull into a parking space, but he'd fucked it. So he'd left it too late to pull in. So by the time I'd realized he was pulling in, and then he wanted to reverse, but then there was cars behind me, so he couldn't reverse. So he waved his arms about, pulled up, and then pulled into the next one available. Now, the next one available had space for like four cars. And rather than going in and pulling up to the end of the four cars, he just pulled in and stopped, taking up probably two cars worth of spaces, maybe, you know. So anyway, as I've pulled in, he's given me some signs as I'm pulling into, because I pulled into to park as well.
But they, you know, waves, thumbs up.
I was encouraged because my back got up. I was encouraged to remain calm during this situation. I gave my word that I'd remain calm. Now, I got out of the car and as we were walking down the road, I was telling myself, be calm, Dougie. And then I looked at the bloke and he looked at me and shook his head. And that was just a red rag.
heard a James Haskell DJ set coming out of his stereo and just snapped.
Yeah. He looked down his nose at me and shook his head. And all semblance of reason left my body. Every single last drip. I won't fill you in on the language, but
please do. I want to know exactly the exchange.
I think what are you shaking your head up, you jowly cunt, came out of my mouth. the one previous that was a pretty similar situation, but I said to him, problem with you old cunts, you think you own the fucking world, don't you? And he went, we do own the world. I went, well, not for much longer, mate, because you'll be dead soon, like that. And as I drove off, I wound down my window and said, it's coming for you, you old man, like that. I felt much better.
At which point he clutched his chest and fell to the floor.
I hope he did. I there would not have been a modicum of remorse. I would have, not only that, I'd have got out of the car and watched him choke out.
Standing on his throat.
Told ya. I told ya. It's what you get. This is what you get.
Don't mess with Dougie Andrews.
No, Russ, come on. You know what the shaky head.
Oh, you know, I know exactly.
Been there, haven't we? When you're like, I'm going to let it go. And then they do the shaky head and you're like, right, that's.
You're having it.
That's enough. On another note, I've forgotten what I was going to say. Oh, I saw Tim at Tim from Egg Chasers last week at Twickenham, and we shared a beverage. It was very nice.
Very nice. How is he? Hopefully, he had a good catch up.
He's good. Yeah, he's good.
Excellent. Mine is very quick. Obviously, you guys and the people on Twitter will know that Ben and I have very much a love affair with The Apprentice, and you know, as bad as it is, they still manage to find the biggest twats on the face of the earth to go into business with. And I mean some of them, they must have some great business ideas. I think the woman that won last year was dog pajamas or something, wasn't she? but this series, I firmly believe they have outdone themselves with level of incompetency. I don't think there's ever been 18 more incompetent people in one room at any one time. And
that last episode was so bad. Like, last year, there were some actually quite likable people in it.
Whereas one of them has got a redeeming feature.
But this year, no. And none of them are any good either.
No.
It's just, it's brilliant to watch.
Yeah.
But I think this is why me and other people stop watching these kind of things. They start being about people who have had genuine aspirations for business or whatever, but all the reality TV programs, once they get into their third or fourth series, it just becomes about people wanting to push their own personality, which effectively means they're cocks.
Yeah, but these people,
and I have no time for that.
These people on The Apprentice aren't even clever enough to push their own personality. They don't even appear to have any kind of agenda. The way that The Apprentice is kind of shot and filmed, like, they don't kind of get the opportunity to do that. They only get their, you know, maybe 30 seconds of talking head bits. And then when they end up in the boardroom, they all just fucking shit their pants anyway. It's unbelievable. And don't get me started on fucking Love Island. I used to love Love Island. And
yeah, that's now
it's ridiculous.
Yeah.
It used to be, let's get 12 people in a villa or whatever, and we'll keep the same 12 people there for at least 3 or 4 weeks and see what happens. And then we'll create a bit of drama as people get to know each other. Sending in sending in a fucking new person every 17 hours. It's got a higher turnover than fucking, I had something lined up then. Completely went out.
England's front row.
Yeah. No, that's the same. That's literally been the same for 4 or 8 years.
Yeah.
No, I think with Love Island now, especially, it's become an exercise in damage limitation, so that when you're finished in Love Island, you haven't done anything that might incriminate you later.
It's become a parody of itself.
Yeah, and the problem is, I don't know where they keep finding these people.
Instagram? Like
they must go through, you know, that Play-Doh thing where you push it down and the hair comes out. Is that one of them for humans? Like 20-year-old humans?
Yeah, I think they are.
Oh, and as you squeeze it down, the fake tits come out, the teeth are all white and shut and the same.
It's funny, isn't it? Because when we were 20, obviously social media didn't exist. You know, Doug, when you were 20, the internet didn't exist. But
year older than you. And massively less fat.
Proportionately less fat. But like, I don't remember like 20-year-olds never looked, when we were 20, didn't look like they look now. And if they did, you were usually avoiding them, going, what the fuck is that?
Yeah, I don't get the dudes, man. Like, what's up with their teeth?
Well, they won't be going to Turkey for a while.
And why do none of them have any muscles in their legs?
Because they can't see their legs in the mirror. Because
it's like they're month-old doner kebabs, their legs.
Month-old doner kebabs.
No, when you go into a kebab house and the spit is like right down to the end.
Yeah, the dregs.
Yeah.
Kebab dregs.
Sure that they should be bigger, right? Because the top bit, that looks all right, but the bottom bit, I don't get it.
They're like the craft tree cheese triangle.
Yeah.
Or a human coat hanger.
An upside down coat hanger.
Yeah, I'm just going to do beach weights, buys and tries, bit of chest.
Yeah.
Where we go.
Beach weights. I bet there's enough blokes at Newquay Rugby Club who do the beach weights, isn't there?
It might give them half a chance if there were.
So I'm gonna keep this at a level, bearing in mind some people might listen who play at the club. One training session, pair yourself up with somebody about the same size as you, stick them on your shoulder and do 10 squats, and 3/4 of the squad couldn't do it. Couldn't squat their own body weight. And I was like, what the fuck do you guys do when you go to the gym? Oh, do arms and chest. So do some fucking leg work. Like I haven't been in a gym in 5 years and I can squat my own weight, no problem at all. It's a walk in the park.
I was the opposite, because I was always self-conscious about going in with all the sort of you know, the show weights guys that are doing their sort of bicep curls and all that. I just used to do legs.
Yeah.
I was like an inverse Love Island. I was great from the waist down.
Legs and backs all you need for rugby.
So a little bit further down, you were great. Maybe not the waist.
Great from the top of the thighs down.
Yeah.
Ankles for Love Island.
Anyway. Oh, that was good fun. Maybe we'll get back together next week after this round of Six Nations games. That's if I make it back from Twickenham on Sunday evening.
I can. What tier of the stand are you in?
Oh, mate, I'm in fucking upper. I'm in the upper of the upper.
I worry that if England lose, Samuel might be thrown over the edge. Just ragdolled off the top tier.
Just some ginger kid flying onto the pitch. Yeah, it'll be all right. It'll be all right. Anyway, it's been fun. We'll be back at some point very soon, and we'll speak to you all very soon. Go well.
Podcast Network.